AgmaReport.com. That's our website. We've got two additional venues. I have a radio show 9 to 10 each Monday through Friday, each morning right here on Global Star Radio Network, as well as BTR. Joe and John Robertson together, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Global Star and BTR.
And folks, if you can, if you've listened to either show, we would love to hear some feedback. Send emails to studio at HagmanandHagman.com. Let us know you listened. Tell us what you think. You know, we're just getting the ball rolling. We're going to have to find our groove each individually as we're doing these shows separately.
Oh, I found my groove.
I'm sure you did. And, you know, at least with our show, John's doing it with me, and he's still on the other side of the country. So I think it's going to continue to improve as the shows go on. And then when he gets here, it should be a little smoother. Not that there's anything wrong with it now, but give us some feedback if you have listened, at studio at HagmanandHagman.com.
We're waiting on and attempting to, contact our guest, John Guandolo. Now, you know him. He's very visible, former FBI agent. Just to give you some background on him so we don't waste his time when he comes on. He is the founder of UnderstandingTheThreat.com. It's an organization dedicated to providing strategic and operational threat-focused consultation, education, and training for federal, state, and local leadership and agencies. He wrote a book, and the book is Raising a Jihadi Generation. I'll tell you right now, if you are a cop, if you are in the brass of a police agency, you're going to need to read this book. It's not a long book, but it's got the outline for affidavits and such. It's a handy tool. And if you are just a citizen like us, okay, or a citizen researcher, investigative journalist, it's so important. It's a great book. Go to UnderstandingTheThreat.com or Amazon.com to buy it. Tremendous book. But John is a 1989 graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy. He took a commission as an officer of the U.S. Marine Corps. He served 2nd Battalion, 2nd Marines, Infantry Platoon Commander in Combat Operations Desert Storm, Desert Shield and Storm. And 91 to 96, he served in the 2nd Force Reconnaissance Company as a platoon commander. I'm not going to go through his entire resume, but suffice to say he's got experience. In 96, he joined the FBI, serving at the Washington field office. We may have crossed paths there, speaking on a personal level. From 96 to 2000, he primarily conducted narcotics investigations domestically and overseas. In 01, he served as the FBI liaison to the U.S. Capitol Police, investigating threats to the president. That's who John Guandolo is, and vice president, members of Congress, by the way, and other high-level government officials. And then after 9/11, he began an assignment to the counterterrorism. This is where it gets good. Counterterrorism division of the FBI field office, Washington, developing an expertise in the Muslim Brotherhood, Huma Abedin's favorite organization, apparently. In my view, allegedly, yes. Islamic doctrine and global Islamic movement. It's just a host of other organizations, terrorist organizations to include, but not limited to Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, others. And so in 06, he created and implemented the FBI's first counterterrorism training education program focusing on the Muslim Brotherhood and their subversive movement in the United States, which I believe was gutted by the Obama people. That's what I do believe. You've seen him. I think he's been on InfoWars a number of times. He's been on stations all across the United States, worldwide. He's a resident expert on all things jihadist. This guy's got the experience on the battlefield, overseas in the sandbox, and also here in the sandbox. I say here, this sandbox, because look what we're becoming. And he raised some warning flags with his book. This book is a must read. And as you know, I'm a voracious reader. His book is a must read. Raising a Jihadi Generation. You've got to read it. So, folks, again, go to UnderstandingTheThreat.com or go to Amazon. But get this book, especially if you're in law enforcement. Get a copy of this book. You will understand what we're facing. I do believe, Eric Tech just gave me the thumbs up, gave us the thumbs up. John Guandolo, welcome to the Hagman Report, sir.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. I think, can you hear okay? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Good audio, good video, I hope.
Yeah, yeah, you're looking good. Eric's making a couple of modifications here, Eric, the tech, to the audio. John, I told the listening and viewing audience about you. It's hard to believe that no one would, that anyone wouldn't know who you are. Let me ask you, your book, by the way, ahead of its time in my view. When I say ahead of its time, it's not out there. I mean, it came out, what, a couple of years ago, but it's still so valid today, especially with the Muslim Brotherhood component and the things that we're seeing. We're in this discussion from immigration, illegal immigration, to this Muslim invasion we're seeing, to all the things that are taking place. Where exactly do you think we should start this particular discussion tonight that'll make sense by the time we're done?
I think with a very, very brief overview to talk about the few points that I think are incredibly pertinent to understanding not only the threat, but how they're doing what they're doing, how they intend to win, because they do intend to win this war, and therefore how we should strategize against it. I think so. The first three points I would lay on the table is, number one, 100% of the enemy we face says that they are Muslims waging jihad in the cause of Allah, their God, to establish an Islamic state, a caliphate under Sharia Islamic law. That's what, whether it's the people, our soldiers and Marines and sailors and airmen met on the battlefields in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere around the world, people that have been captured or killed in Europe or the United States doing acts of jihad. They all say the same things. They write about it. They give us videos. They speak about it. They teach about it. That's who they say they are. And when you actually unpack Sharia and you read authoritative books of Islamic law, they actually do command and oblige Muslims to wage jihad until the entire world is under Sharia. And 100% of Islamic law only defines jihad as warfare against non-Muslims. So that's the first part. They have a very focused agenda. It's to impose Sharia on the entire world, and their blueprint for battle is Sharia. Since 9/11, our leadership, our intelligence community, our military, our law enforcement has not looked at and studied Sharia in totality in order to devise an understanding of the enemy and a strategy to defeat him. That's point one. Second point is, it wouldn't matter that that's true if there weren't people actually trying to do it, but we know there are. And in the United States, the Islamic movement, which is primarily led by the Muslim Brotherhood, and in the evidence in a number of terrorism trials, but the one that I cite the most is the United States versus the Holy Land Foundation for Relief and Development, the largest terrorism financing and Hamas trial ever successfully prosecuted in U.S. history, a 15-year FBI investigation that culminated in their indictments in November 2001 after the 9/11 attacks. And the evidence reveals that the most prominent Islamic organizations in the United States, in fact, are hostile and a part of this hostile movement led by the Muslim Brotherhood. That's point two.
And I don't mean to interrupt you, because we don't do that. But I would like to point out to our listeners and viewers, in his book, he devotes a chapter to the implications of the Holy Land Foundation trial. By the way, CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, is an unindicted co-conspirator in that every time that comes up, I like to mention that, remind everyone what CARE is, but You did it. In fact, out of all the books I've read about the Holy Land Foundation trial, I think you did the best job in explaining and laying out the implications of that. And thank you for that. Again, his book is Raising a Jihadi Generation. Highly recommended. It's on our bookshelf.
Thank you.
And you did a great job with that. Go ahead. And that's the last time I'll interrupt, I promise.
Well, that's okay. First of all, I appreciate the comment. And I, for your audience, CARE was identified as a member by the Department of Justice as a member of the Palestine Committee, the Muslim Brotherhood's U.S. Palestine Committee, which is Hamas. So Kerr is not only an unindicted co-conspirator, they're identified by the Department of Justice as a member of the Muslim Brotherhood's Palestine Committee, which is Hamas, and that's what the evidence demonstrates. If you go to our website, understandingthethreat.com, right on the homepage, there's a block that says Kerr is Hamas. If you click it, there's a document that lays out the facts that Kerr is, in fact, Hamas. And as you all know, because you know Chris Gobbets, my vice president for Understand the Threat on our team, he went undercover against Kerr at their headquarters for 6 months. And everything he learned and all the documents, the over 12,000 documents he retrieved, just support the fact that Kerr is involved in sedition and terrorism and other criminal activities. So let me just finish this thought on starting the discussion, really. So the three points are all the enemy that we face, all the individuals and all the groups, whether it's ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, Muslim Brotherhood, Tabliki Jamaat, Jamaati Islami, you keep naming them, they all say that the purpose for what they're doing is to establish an Islamic state under Sharia. It is all about Sharia. The Holy Land Foundation trial revealed there's a massive jihadi, or if you want, terrorist network here in the United States that is comprised of thousands of organizations, but especially the most prominent Islamic organizations in the United States. And as a sidebar, the leaders of those organizations are the people that our government, since 9/11, have relied upon to tell them how to fight the war. But we can get to that in a moment. And the third piece is we have to understand. And if your viewers and listeners take away anything, it's the understanding of how the Muslim Brotherhood's plan to wage what they call civilization jihad by our hands, meaning they get our leaders to do their bidding for them. How that works, that is something I believe we need to talk in detail about, because it's how they're winning the war, and we as an organization, and Chris and I individually, bump up against it every day, because you have people who believe they're doing the right things, whether it's a pastor or a senator or a police chief or a sheriff or a businessman or a citizen, and they think they're doing the right thing, and in fact they're doing exactly what the enemy wants them to do. And there's a way they get you to do that. It's certainly an art of warfare. It's political warfare. It's subversion. It's an insurgent movement here in the United States. So those are the three pieces I think I want to put on the table to lead this discussion today.
Very, very good. And what a great place to start, or a great foundation that you've laid. Ultimately, I mean, and I think we really have to understand, and this is my personal opinion, that it's the intent, as you pointed out, it's the intent to establish an Islamic state here, to subvert our constitution, make Sharia the law of the land, and to establish a caliphate or an Islamic state here in the United States and throughout the West. And we're in agreement on that, as you just said, basically. But
right.
Okay, what bothers me about what's taken place is, John, you were in the FBI, obviously, prior to 9/11. Well, I'm just going to come around and ask this question, because I have... When I heard you were coming on, and I want to thank, by the way, Connie Hernandez, Epic Quest Media, by the way. Thank you, Connie, so very much for your efforts and for arranging this interview. But I want to ask you this question, and I want to get your take on it. If I would have told you back on September 12th of 2001 that Barack Hussein Obama would be the president of the United States in 7 years, would you have punched me in the mouth?
I don't know what my reaction would have been. It would have been hard to imagine that somebody so overtly supportive of the jihadi movement would have become president of the United States. That would have been hard to imagine. However, I will say this. Knowing that's on the one hand, like on the common sense American patriotic post 9/11 immediately after 9/11, hard to imagine. Once you understand how this movement works, and how they've achieved so much since 9/11 in propelling their objectives and achieving their objectives, I would say, looking back, it makes perfect sense.
You're right.
Because of, and it's all about, I want to make this clear again for your listeners and viewers, this is much more a war of information, a war of propaganda than it is a terrorism matter. It's much more, from a military standpoint, a counterintelligence and espionage war than it is a war of terrorism and battlefield fighting. We think it's battlefield fighting because that's what the news shows us. We had a very long, you know, war in Afghanistan, a long war in Iraq. And here's the question. How is it possible that the United States of America lost the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan when our military heroically crushed the enemy on the battlefield in Iraq, on the battlefields of Iraq and Afghanistan? How did we lose? And if you understand, because the enemy doesn't intend to win on the battlefield of guns and bombs, they intend to take down the United States government. And they intend to do it. And I will tell you, it's my professional opinion, we've spoken about this publicly, that they are winning significantly, that we are still in 2017 not engaging them where they're engaging us. They're engaging us at our elementary schools, at local school boards, at state houses, in chambers of commerce, and the entire interfaith outreach, by the way, is controlled by the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood here in the United States. They're, when, you know, ask yourself, how is it that one of the things this president was all about was designating the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization, and that's fallen off the front burner? These things are not accidental. There is a lot going on, and it is much more counterintelligence and espionage than it is terrorism matters.
So it's asymmetrical, is what you're saying. The battle.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think people really need to understand the depth of this and the deception of this. And you do, again, folks, John Guandondo really lays this out exceptionally in his book Raising a Jihadi Generation. You've got to get yourself a copy of this book, in my view, because you'll be much better off for it. And also understandingthethreat.com is his website, but Chris Gabatz, Muslim Mafia as well, Dave Gabatz, and but nonetheless, okay.
What really gets me in what you just laid out is something we were talking with our last guest about, is the Islamic ability to, even after terrorist attacks, not only in Europe, but here in America, be given basically victimhood status by the media. Yes. And establishment, even when they're the ones perpetrating the terror attacks. How does this make sense in all this? Why is the media and many people in the entertainment industry and these politicians not only converting to Islam, but are the first ones, you know, after a terrorist attack, to speak out against those people who are condemning Islam after an attack rather than condemning the attack itself?
Because that's the intentional outcome of the Muslim Brotherhood's strategy and their work at the ground level. I mean, you have to understand, the Muslim Brotherhood's Muslim Public Affairs Council has a Hollywood division, and their Hollywood division works with directors, film studios to ensure, and actors, to ensure that nothing negative about Islam comes out, and that Islam is portrayed as, you know, what it truly is, according to them, a peaceful, loving religion. And so that's why you get this nonsense, a counterfactual understanding of Islam. Listen, we can go through, but you know that Jerry Gordon, the director of many movies, and including the show, you know, 24 and all these other things, there's a great article and picture of him with Salam al-Mariati, the director of the Muslim Public Affairs Council, just yucking it up. These guys, the bad guys, the Muslim brothers, our enemy, jihadis in suits, come to people, be they actors or senators or producers or pastors, wearing suits, talking very kindly. Let me just maybe answer that question, punctuate the answer with this. A colleague of mine was in Egypt recently, and meeting with Egyptian security. I'll leave it at that. And the Egyptian security was testing him to see if he really understood this issue. And he said, "You're in a room full of Muslims. How do you know who the bad guys is?" And my colleague said, "What I'm saying to you, the best looking, nicest talking, best dressed guy in the room is the most dangerous guy in the room. That's how this works." And until we understand that, I can't tell you if I had a dollar for every law enforcement officer, state legislator, member of Congress, pastor, business leader who told me so-and-so can't be a jihadi because I know him and he's a nice guy and he dresses well and his kids, I know his children and, you know, unbelievable, because we can't comprehend that this is how they wage war. So your comment about asymmetric warfare is right on the mark. Your question about how can the media and actors and Hollywood be supporting them, that's the first piece. The second piece is, quite frankly, the majority of the media are Marxists, and they lean with Marxist, communist, socialists. So they're already enemies of the United States. So joining forces with Muslims, and specifically with the Muslim Brotherhood, against the United States is not a far stretch.
Very well laid out. We got about 3.5-4 minutes before our network break at the bottom of the hour. How, in the conversation, I guess my question at this point would be, just in the minutes we have before the break, the doors were open, I believe, by George W. Bush contemporarily, to allow this penetration to come in. I'm not blaming him directly. It's the policies that he created, perhaps with being naive, perhaps. How much damage did the Obama administration do to our country via the invitation, Muslim Brotherhood, Muslim invasion, or whatever else might have happened? Or is that the wrong question to ask? And if it's the wrong question to ask, feel free to correct me.
I think that's a good question. I do want to point out that this really started during the Clinton administration, when they started bringing these guys into the White House. The first, not the first, but the most significant penetration in our government to date at that point was Abdurrahman al-Hammoudi, who was the most prominent Islamic leader in the United States and turned out to be a financier for al-Qaeda, who was involved in a plot with two al-Qaeda guys to kill the Saudi crown prince, who became King Abdullah. That continued during the Bush administration, where junior varsity, maybe naive Republicans inside the administration, especially a lot of the staffers, thought that these guys were great. So terrorists like Sami Al-Aryan, Nihad Awad, Abdurrahman al-Hammoudi, Suhail Khan, these are at the top of the heap, certainly the top level of Muslim Brotherhood folks in the nation were welcomed into that administration. But the damage done under the Obama administration was devastating. I mean, essentially they had free rein, and I want to quote from last summer, July 2016, the guy who led the Combating Terrorism Technical Support Office for the Pentagon on a national radio program, when he said, under the Bush administration, these guys were at the table. Under the Obama administration, they were controlling the narrative. They were making the decisions. And his quote was this: "The U.S. national security decision-making process is controlled by the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood when it comes to these matters, the matters of Islam, terrorism, and all of that." And UTT has publicly concurred with those comments. Those are absolutely true. So think about how devastating that is. They are controlling the national security decision-making process, certainly under the Obama administration, and some of that is continuing today because many of them and many of their inroads have not been rooted out yet.
you know, that's amazing to hear. And many people overlook the fact that the door was really opened during the same administration that dealt with 9/11, the George Bush administration.
Well, Clinton, and then...
Well, yeah, but I mean, we saw significant changes with CARE.
Right.
And that between the Bush administration and the Obama administration. And then when you see people like John Brennan converting to Islam, and I mean, it's mind-boggling to think that the counterterrorism and apparatus and information is
the man who,
being controlled by the terrorists themselves.
Yeah,
I mean, that they were given this kind of this power, this authority, and ability. And we had a guest on who was inside of DHS since its inception, who laid out his story. I can't remember his name right now. I think it was Tom something.
Philip Haney.
That's exactly
Philip
right.
Philip Haney. He's coming back.
Who talked about how, you know, his work in investigating terrorists and compiling the information and databases, you know, were wiped out, and his investigations were stopped because the people in charge of whatever information centers did not like the information that he was collecting, and that he was doing, you know, a really good job for a country that was really trying to go after terrorism. But when the terrorists are running the asylum, you know, he was getting too close to the fire, so they did everything they could to try to fire him, to suppress his information. And to think that that happens in this country at the highest levels of government is absolutely unacceptable. Folks, we are up against the break. Our guest, understandingthethreat.com is the website, and the book, I don't have the book title.
Oh, the book is Raising a Jihadi Generation. Highly recommended.
There it is, up on the screen. You can get it on Amazon. Folks, we'll be right back after this short break. Don't go anywhere.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you could possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is... It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric said.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Trading Post in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We are offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.trainpersonwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
We'll be right back.
back to this edition of the Hagman and the Hagman Report. Our very special guest, Mr. John Guandolo. You know him. He's everywhere. UnderstandingTheThreat.com, the founder of UnderstandingTheThreat.com. Bookmark that website. Very important information there. As well as his book, Raising a Jihadi Generation. This is a must read if you're a police officer or if you're, and I know we have many smaller agencies in Western New York, upstate New York, listening to this broadcast. I would urge your department to get this book, Raising a Jihadi Generation. It's invaluable to fighting what we're facing today. So, UnderstandingTheThreat.com. Chris Kabatz as well is involved in this organization. We interviewed him before, and watch the social networking as well as John's website, Understanding the Threat, for this interview and also Chris's interview, or links to them at the very least. Now, having said all that, I want to make sure I again thank Connie Hernandez, Epic Quest Media LLC. Connie Hernandez, Connie, thank you so much. Publicly thank you for assisting in setting this interview up. I know Mr. Guandolo is an extremely busy man and in demand. I don't know how he does it. And as if you want to read his bio, it would take me to the end of the segment to read it. Let's just say that he's got the scars, he's got the stars, he's been there, and he knows what he's talking about. If I can just start this segment out with a piece of news that broke this morning, or broke today. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, her director of IT, Imran Awan, the Awan brothers, the five, the three brothers, the two wives. I'm sure you're familiar with that whole situation, the Capitol Police procurement. They arrested Imran Awan attempting to leave the country, ultimate destination Pakistan, after finding the FBI took seized the broken down hard drives. Is this reflective in general, and then you could take this wherever you want to take it, but in general, is this reflective of how badly we've been infested, and I use that word deliberately, by this this Islamic terrorist component?
Yes. It's just one small tip of the iceberg, and I want to rewind back to 7 years ago when Congresswoman Sue Myrick held a press conference after the book Muslim Mafia came out. And she discussed her concern that the evidence that Chris Gobetz, who's our vice president, Understand the Threat, the evidence he pulled out of CARE's headquarters indicated they were trying to get people inside Homeland Security committees on the Hill, the intelligence committees, and other key national security committees, with the intent, obviously, of collecting information and conducting an information operation. In other words, to influence how they made decisions, how they viewed the problems. That's what I talk about. When I say this is much more an information war than it is a terrorism matter, this is how it gets done. This was espionage, right? The case of James Yee, the Muslim imam down at Guantanamo Bay, and his band of some uniformed and contract linguists, that was espionage, that case. And everybody was charged except him. He got away scot-free. But these cases that we see are absolutely indicative. You have people just like this inside our airport security, literally Sharia-adherent Muslims wearing TSA uniforms, Sharia-adherent Muslims working in security, like contracted security. Sharia-adherent Muslims working, loading the planes, working out on the deck, meaning the tarmac. You have Sharia-adherent Muslims in baggage all over the airports. And I'll just say the greatest example I can think of is the president, the leader of Hamas in Arizona, Mohammed El-Sharkway, works at Sky Harbor Phoenix Airport managing baggage handlers. He's the former executive director for CARE in Arizona. That's Hamas. I mean, you have to understand, this is, we are just giving our security away. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. But yes,
okay,
we should be very concerned.
All right. And take it from here, wherever you want to, however you want to we've got about 23 minutes to this segment. So you just take it wherever you want to take it. I mean, you laid this out so nicely at the beginning. We don't want to, you know, take you off your train of thought. So from here, where do we go from here logically in this discussion? Yeah, because we can go like 15 different directions, right?
I guess now, my next question would be, are we seeing in the Trump administration a transition away from the way that things were done under the Obama administration, or haven't we reached that point yet?
On some topical issues, yes. The Secretary of State and the President failed to host an iftar dinner celebrating the end of Ramadan at the White House and at the State Department. That's a major, major change. Now, that may not seem like a big deal to the average viewer out there. That's a major change. That was a gut punch for the MB, but to them, they'll work around it. They're okay with that. It's not good for them, but they've got a lot of other stuff going on. I just want to throw this out for your listeners and viewers. The iftar dinner, just so we understand, iftar comes at the end of Ramadan, and what it celebrates is the first Muslim military victory over non-Muslim forces. So my question would be, should we really be celebrating that anywhere in America?
Absolutely not.
Right. So why have we been doing it since the Clinton administration? That's the question. Those are some good things. Let me just point out some not so good things. I and a few of my colleagues were helpful in identifying people even prior to the inauguration that were getting inside Mr. Trump's campaign, his administration as it was being developed, that were bad guys. And we were able to give them a name, give senior people around Mr. Trump names of two people the first two people, I and a few other guys identified, and explaining why they're bad, and they got punted. There was another guy who was unfortunately one of only a couple people charged with screening national security positions for Mr. Trump, and he was batting for the other team. So this is what I mean when I say this is more about now he ended up getting punted also, but this is the problem. This particular individual was a self-professed Christian and Republican, but batting for the other team. So this leads me into so let me answer.
Wait a second. Self-professed Christian and Republican. Christian.
Yeah, he was a Republican. He was known. He's kind of a long-term known civilian inside government sectors. Okay. Not anybody that if I said his name, you would know it. I'm not going to say his name, but
right.
He known among circles of people that run constantly at that level of government.
Wow.
But he would have told you he doesn't support terrorism. This leads into that discussion about civilization jihad. So let me, if I may, just explain how they do what they do. First of all, their stated objective is to the Muslim Brotherhood bylaws say that the Muslim Brotherhood is, quote, a Muslim body which seeks to establish Allah's law in the land. That's a quote right out of their bylaws. It says that they also have to fight the tyrants. This is a quote, fight the tyrants and enemies of Allah in order to establish an Islamic state. That's right out of the Muslim Brotherhood bylaws. So we normally ask people we're speaking with, like law enforcement, government leaders, citizens, if that's all you know about the Muslim Brotherhood, should they be the exclusive liaison between the federal government, the U.S. federal government, and the U.S. Muslim community? And it's a rhetorical question. But when you actually then dive deeper, it gets much worse. Because, of course, these people should not be the exclusive point of contact for all matters Islamic. But that is how they intend to win the war. After 9/11, we looked around. Who are the experts? The groundwork had already been laid for the long before 9/11 in academic circles that in order to know something about a particular topic, you had to be part of it. So if you wanted to know about Chinese culture, You can't talk to anybody who's not a Chinese person, because that's just that you wouldn't get the right information. Only a Chinese person can tell you about Chinese culture. So somebody that studies it for 30 years, makes 50 trips to China, studies it, writes books about it, their input is of no value. And it came out of a book called Orientalism, and it was taught at all of our great universities, and I'm being sarcastic now, that this idea, it's just like how we've dumbed down our education, but this is a big point. This dumbing down of our education at the elementary, junior high, high school, collegiate, university level, and then this infusion of a complete undoing of reasoned thought, rational thought, logic, philosophy, Western philosophy is out the window. So it lays the groundwork that if I'm not a Muslim, in my opinion, I can't talk about Islam. So who do we look for at the highest levels of government to when we want to ask about Islam? We look for prominent Islamic leaders. Unfortunately, 100% of America's prominent Islamic leaders are jihadis, or if you prefer, excuse me, terrorists. But actually, terrorism means something very different in Sharia, so I like to use the words they use and define them the way they define them. And I'm going to get to that, the language. So this civilization jihad continues after 9/11, where we look, government officials, including the president, look to prominent Islamic leaders who are, without exception, either senior Muslim Brotherhood leaders or ideologically aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood that want to bring down the country. So you want to know why in 2005 the United States State Department created Islamic republics in Afghanistan and Iraq under Sharia law? Because who was advising us? We lost the war in 2005 and then kept fighting for years because we don't understand the enemy. That's when the war ended. That was Al-Qaeda's goal in Iraq and Afghanistan, to establish Islamic states under Sharia. And we did it. That's called civilization jihad by our hand. The U.S. government did that. When General Petraeus stood in a foreign country in his uniform with four stars on and told international media that was standing there that a pastor in Florida needed to not exercise his First Amendment rights by burning a book, the Quran, that's the imposition of the Islamic law of slander, which, by the way, says is to say anything about Islam that a Muslim would dislike, be it true or not true. That's the Islamic law of slander, and it's a capital crime. When they can get a four-star general to tell a pastor not to burn a book, and I don't care, those people out there saying, well, it endangers the troops. Really? So that is how they do it. They get our leaders to impose Islamic law on our citizens. Civilization jihad by our hands. When in 2000, now you referenced this at the beginning of your show. In 2011, when the Muslim Brotherhood in the Islamic Society of North America, the Council on American Islamic Relations, and the Muslim Public Affairs Council goes to President Obama in the White House and says, this training inside the government in a Joint Forces Staff College, inside the FBI and other places, about Islam is bigoted and racist and offensive. This is the Islamic law of slander. It offends Muslims. They don't like it. Therefore, it has to be stopped. What happened? The FBI director, the DHS secretary, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs shut it all down, and I know very intimately because I participated in the one course at the Joint Forces Staff College. It was a 12-session course, five of those sessions. Each time they ran it, myself and my colleague participated in it, and it spoke truth. And all it took was one Muslim who wasn't even in the class filed a complaint, and it went from CARE to ISNA, MPAC, to the White House, and that it was done. That's the imposition of Islamic law by our hands, by our leaders. This is how it works. When police chiefs and sheriffs and pastors are befriended by leaders of known Muslim Brotherhood Islamic societies or Islamic centers or groups like the Islamic Circle of North America, Islamic Society of North America, which those are the two organizations primarily running the U.S. interfaith outreach among, or sometimes it's called ecumenical outreach, but if Muslims are involved, that's the Muslim Brotherhood. This is how it works, and they befriend them, and they teach them a counterfactual narrative of Islam. In other words, they teach them BS. They teach them what's untrue about Islam, and these pastors and these rabbis, they all gobble it up, and they're like, this guy's so nice. So when I'm standing in my church or another church, and I lay out the truth, they look at me, or people like me, I've had this, you know, hundreds of people share their experiences, people that understand the threat, speak in their own churches, they're told by their pastor and the leadership to shut up. That's civilization jihad by our hands. This is how it works, folks. And the people doing it most times don't understand that they're fighting on the side of the enemies of the United States.
How deceptive is that? And that's deceptive by design. That's built into their mechanism. And you point this out, folks, raising a jihadi generation, as well as on his website, Understanding the Threat. But you did very well pointing this out. And I see us succumbing to this more and more. You've got this unbelievable, evangelical embracing the Muslims. It's counterintuitive.
From the Vatican, to the interfaith dialogues and the things that go on here in this country. And what's really unfortunate about this is what you said earlier, is that, you know, sometimes the most well-dressed and nicest appearing person is the most dangerous in the room. And that's exactly, unfortunately, what, are many in the Christian faith that are in churches that are lukewarm. That's what it boils down to, you know, appearance. And just like in the world, the churches have so conformed to the world that they've lost their own identity and no longer even follow basic biblical foundations. And then you can expect that from the government, you can expect that from the media, but when it comes into the churches and you see, as you said, rabbis and pastors acquiescing to this and bending over to make this happen, that is very concerning. Not only are they misleading in their own faith, they're misleading the whole congregation of people that follow them, and it brings this false sense of security with what we see with the links between terrorism and infiltration, where these people are allowed to lie, they're allowed to state other purposes for why they're saying they're doing what they're doing that are and may not have any basis in truth, but the real agenda is to infiltrate and take over. And this, as you stated, the people in the media and what some call the red-green access, it is just it's an assault from all directions. And there's not, I mean, thankfully, some of the American people are still able to think for themselves and see right through this and will never accept Sharia law or Islam to take them over. But I see more and more people, and even what we see with the homosexual movement, they're teaming up with Islam.
How is that even possible, John?
Yeah.
How is that even possible? Linda Sarsour and company.
Because if Islam is a religion of peace, it's just one off of Christianity and Judaism, then and the Muslim leaders are openly... Listen, the Muslim leaders took Jewish leaders to Auschwitz to show how much they care. And the Jewish leaders that went swallowed that fishing line, hook, line, and sinker. I mean, I don't... Spiritually blind, naive, stupid, I don't know which, but dangerous. And if they're the shepherd of a flock, incredibly dangerous, because they're not just putting themselves in danger. But with each, part of this, how they do it with each group, with the Jewish community, with Catholics, with Protestants, with evangelicals, with non-denominational Christians, they approach them very differently. And the way they do the dialogue, because remember, this is counterintelligence. It's espionage. This is propaganda. And so the way they approach each group, very different and very effective. I think, and they're winning. There are a couple. I want to tie up a couple things that I think are very important. Number one, we've talked about it, but I want to really emphasize this point. The Muslim Brotherhood published a book in 1989 called The Methodology of Dawah. And what that is how they do Dawah. Dawah is the call to Islam that is required under Islamic law before you can wage jihad. You must call non-Muslims to Islam and give them the opportunity to either convert to Islam, submit to Islamic law and pay the jizya, or to be killed, because that's Islamic law. Those are the only choices for Christians and Jews. Non-Christians, Jews, and Zoroastrians have to either convert or be killed per Islamic law. So in that book about how to do the call to Islam, the dawah, in the United States, it says the United States of America, from their analysis, is the best place in the West to establish an Islamic state. And it goes back to what I'm talking about the civilization jihad. The lukewarmness in our churches is devastating. And I would say that this rise, if I may, this rise of non-denominational Christianity is simply a step towards no Christianity in some people's lives. It's why many people that fall into this non-denominational Christian, they've lost the credo of the Apostles' Creed. They've lost the dogmatic teachings of the apostles. And why is this important? You said it, the way you said it was they've lost the biblical foundations, the things that were taught by Jesus in the Bible are kind of thrown to the wind because it's kind of this everything's okay. And it goes back to me mentioning like this all comes together. This, the moral relativism, the idea of Orientalism, that you have to be a Muslim to talk about Islam, that you have to be a Jew to talk about Judaism, you have to be a Christian. So that takes logic, reasoning, and academic thought and throws it out the window. You got to understand what this is. It's the destruction of reason thought that then leads us to a place where we have to rely on our enemy to tell us what they're doing. And of course, they're telling us the exact opposite. And so over time, in the Christian community, they're roping these people who have already been led astray and don't know what they stand for. And it allows Christians to create things like Chrislam, where Christians are joining Muslims and they're taking the parts of the Bible out that offends Muslims. And they're calling it Chrislam. And it's the way that we can come together with our brothers and sisters in love and harmony. I got to tell you, that's... there are other words for that, and in the Christian church for thousands of years, I mean, yeah, 1600 years, people were punted out of the church for this kind of, that's a heresy. And all the heresies we see from the first century to today, the way we deal with them today seems to be much different than they were dealt with even 300 years ago. And so it's the complete watering down of people standing firm, whether it's on the faith, on the founding principles of this country, or on logic and reason thought, whatever it is, Western philosophical principles. All of those have been watered down to the point that, you know, these kind of nonsensical ideas come forward that somehow a barbaric system, Islam, Sharia, that calls for homosexuals to be killed, people who leave Islam to be killed, non-Muslims to either convert, submit to Islamic law with lesser rights, pay a non-Muslim poll tax, or be killed, that somehow this is equal with Western Christian principles and thought. It's insane. It's the same thought that says cannibalism is no different than Judaism or Christianity. That they're, you know, philosophically, if what you say is true, what I say is true, it's all good. No, there is right and there is wrong. There is good and there is evil. And by the way, our country was founded on the ideals of the Declaration, the law of nature's God, and the law of nature. And from that comes our law and government. And it is laid out legally in Blackstone's commentaries that the law of nature's God is Holy Scripture legally, and the law of nature is the will of God as it's experienced by mankind on earth. You can't have a constitutional republic without a moral standard, and that's laid out in our founding what that moral standard is. All of this is not separate and apart. When you brought up the red-green axis, the red the Marxist communist hard left movement working directly with the Islamic movement to destroy liberty. That's what this is all about. And I'm just so grateful you all have given me this opportunity and platform to share this and to give time to actually walk it out. I'm really grateful.
You've actually taken us to the top of the hour, and
fantastic
timing. Yeah, absolutely. John Guandalo, thank you so very much for joining us. You're taking a big chunk of your time out to set up and be with us. We want to thank you for that. Thank you for your efforts, for your continued efforts to fight this threat. Thank you for your book that you have written, Raising a Jihadi Generation, available on Amazon, and your website, understandingthethreat.com. And thank you for all you do.
We look forward to having you back on.
Please.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to being back on. Appreciate it. Bless you.
Bless you as well. All right, folks. That was John Guandalo.
Didn't get a chance to find out what the sword was about. I forgot to ask. I will have to do that next time.
That's in case we got
a story behind it.
No. I'll tell you what. In case I got out of line, man.
Folks, we'll be right back after this network break. Each and every Tuesday evening, Standeo is our guest. Go to standeo.com, pull up the show images page. He will be with us in the next hour after this network break, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagmann Report. Stay tuned.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the Belly of the Beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagmann. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagmann takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate a maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in this community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmannandHagmann.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmannandHagmann.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.